program. The program has been a phenomenal success. Every day from early in the morning until sometimes late at night, we have had individuals, young women from Yeshiva University, from Stern College, and Chabrutot, and Shirim, and classes of all kinds. And the buzz of Torah learning has truly not deserted this Beit Midrash this summer. It has been a wonderful, wonderful program. I really want to thank all of the people who have been involved, all the participants in the program, Daphne Secunda, Mrs. Alana Steinhain, and everybody else from Yeshiva University for making this such an outstanding program. The second thing I want to say just very, very quickly is that, of course, something of a summer break is coming up after Tisha B'Av, but this is Lincoln Square and the learning never stops. I'm delighted to announce that Mrs. Alana Steinhain, our community scholar, has been working exceptionally hard and ready to announce tonight that a brand new program is going to be starting at Lincoln Square after the Chagim. You can see leaflets. The lecture list is in formation, but our new program for the coming year will be called Tefillah Bashana. It's going to be based on the very, very exciting new Siddur, the new Koran Sack Siddur, authored by Lord Jonathan Sacks, the Chief Rabbi of the British Commonwealth. And you can see in formation already an outstanding list of speakers and scholars are going to be taking part in this program. This, as well as many other things that are going to be taking place in the shul, both before and after the Chagim. Having said all of that, I really want to just say one more word, which is to welcome our guest speaker. And it is always for us at Lincoln Square a tremendous kavod and honor to have Rabbi Schachter. I'll just be very, very personal for one second. I absolutely adore Rabbi Schachter. I know it sounds almost disrespectful to say such, but since the moment I arrived in this country, he has been a source of friendship, a source of guidance, of solace sometimes, and more importantly, of learning and of inspiration. Rabbi Schachter, as you can read all about in the program, is a university professor of Jewish history and Jewish thought, and senior scholar at the Center for the Jewish Future. What that means, Lemaisa, is that he is an unbelievable scholar. He is one of the foremost exponents of proponents of clarifying and popularizing the thought of the late Rabbi Soloveitchik. And in fact, just in preparation for Tisha B'Av, I turned to the one book that I've used since it came out, Rabbi Schachter's book on the keynote, as explained by the Rav Zatzal. I will say, in just thinking about Tisha B'Av, which is coming up tomorrow night, of course, that to me this Tisha B'Av feels like, I feel like it's Erev Yom Kippur, not Erev Tisha B'Av. And generally speaking, they're two very, very different days. With all of the terrible news and the terrible challenge, normally when we come to Tisha B'Av, the challenge is, of course, to mourn. And mourn we have to terribly, but I have a real sense that we have to do teshuva as well. And since I have been zoche and privileged to hear some outstandingly, dazzlingly brilliant tshuva lectures from Rabbi Schachter over the years, as well as his beautiful expositions on the keynote and Tisha B'Av, it's a double benefit that he's here this year, of all years, to enlighten us and to inspire us and to get us into, in Mirtz Hashem, the proper frame of mind to mourn and to do tshuva for this Tisha B'Av, Rabbi Schachter.
I want to thank Rabbi Robinson very much for that really warm introduction. It's an honor for me to have the opportunity to spend some time here in this really great shul, a shul that is very close to a shul that I had a close relationship to for many, many years. But I think it's this shul, it's really Lincoln Square Synagogue, that inspired me way back when I was thinking about choosing a career. It was this synagogue and Rabbi Riskin that inspired me to go into the rabbinate as a career. I remember being in this room probably 40 years ago and being inspired, and I continue to be inspired when I come into this building and continue to be inspired in this building under the leadership of Rabbi Robinson. What a zechus you have to have landed with such an extraordinary rabbi who has so many talents and so many strengths. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give you and the shul koach as you make the transition from this building to the new building, Bekarov Mamish at the right time, whenever it should be, to continue to be the tremendous beacon of light and inspiration, not only in this neighborhood, but in this city and beyond. I also want to thank Daphna Secundo, who just walked in, very much for inviting me to come here this evening. And what a wonderful shidduch it is to have Yeshiva University and Lincoln Square Synagogue together for this month and winding down now for the program that you all and this shul and neighborhood experienced for the last number of weeks. Rabbi Soloveitchik always said that the recital of Kinos on Tisha B'Av is like the recital of Tefillah. We know that when we daven, davening is not just simply saying words, it's not just simply reciting formula, and it's not just simply articulating sounds, but Tefillah has a halacha of avodah shebelev, that there's an inner, personal, interior component that goes with prayer. Prayer is not some external performance, but it's an inner experience. Avodah shebelev, by definition, lev means inside. It's not avodah shebelips, it's avodah shebelev. And Rav Soloveitchik said that the same thing applies also to the recital of Kinos and to the experience of Tisha B'Av. It's not just going through the motions, it's not just saying words, it's not just avoiding food and drink, but it's an experience. It's something that we need to internalize and to understand and to appreciate. I want to begin by reflecting on an event that passed already, but if it has to happen, it'll happen again next year. That is the fast of Shivasar B'Tammuz. I want to start with the fast of Shivasar B'Tammuz, and then I want to move towards tomorrow night and Thursday in order to help us understand the significance of what it means to feel a sense of loss and a sense of mourning in 2009. Baruch Hashem, we're living in such a wonderful time, and we have so much, and we live in such beautiful neighborhoods, and we have such a great shul, and we have such great lay leaders and such great spiritual leaders. Everything is wonderful. So what's missing? What's missing? We have a state of Israel. I know that there are difficulties and challenges, but Shechiyonu v'kiyomonu v'igiyonu lazman hazeh. Why is it that close to 2,000 years from Churban Bayis Sheni, and close to 2,500 years from Churban Bayis Rishon, why is this still on our radar screen? Why is it that for the last couple of weeks I haven't shaved? Why is it that I care, or we should care, about what happened apparently so many years ago? I want to start with Shivasar B'Tammuz, and I want to work our way up to Tisha B'Av. If you look at the bottom of the first page of the Xerox sheets, does anybody not have one? If you don't, just sit next to somebody. If two people are sitting together, maybe we could share. Okay, right here. Daphne, right here, two people. You have? Oh, so you could share. Okay. Anybody else need? The Mishnah at the end of Maseches Tainis, the first Mishnah in the last parak of Maseches Tainis, talks about the fact that there are a number of historical events that happen on Shivasar B'Tammuz, and a number of historical events that happen on Tisha B'Av. Two lines from the bottom of page one, Chavav Amed Aleph in Tainis, Chamisha Dvarim Ira Savasenu B'Shivasar B'Tammuz, V'Chamisha B'Tisha B'Av. We begin with Shivasar B'Tammuz, one of the five historical events that happened. V'Shivasar B'Tammuz Nishtabru, next page, Nishtabru Haluchos, Chavav Amed Beis, Haluchos were broken, Ubotel HaTamid, the daily ongoing sacrifice in the temple was stopped, V'Hufka Ha'ir, and the city was breached, V'Sarif Apustumus Es HaTorah, somebody by the name of Apustumus burnt a Torah, and either V'He'emid, or the Gersa of Rashi is V'Hu Amad Tzelem B'Heichal, that there was some altar that was placed in the Temple Mount. So these are five events. Of the five, the one that is most well known, if you stop somebody, you ask them, why is Shivasar B'Tammuz important? What happened on Shivasar B'Tammuz? What will be the answer? You will say that the city of Jerusalem, the walls were breached. Namely, the third out of the five. The other four are significant. The Gemara tries to figure out what they mean. It's not so simple. It's not so clear. Some of them are enigmatic. What do you mean, batal hatamud? The daily sacrifice was stopped. When was it stopped? Under what circumstances was it stopped? We're not given any information. But the most famous one is that the city is breached. The Gemara at the bottom, on page 2, the Gemara tries to figure out, how do you know that the city of Jerusalem, that the walls of the city of Jerusalem were breached on Shivasar B'Tamuz? And the Gemara asks a question, because the evidence that we find in the biblical text, in fact, does not support the 17th of Tammuz as the day on which the walls were breached. 6-7 lines from the bottom, Frekti Gemara Hufko Ir Buyat Zayin Hava. You're telling me that the city was breached on the 17th? V'aksiv b'chodesh ha-revi, in the fourth month, b'tisha l'chodesh v'yechazak ha-ra'av b'iruchsiv b'asrei v'atibaka ha-ir. That the city was breached on the 9th of the fourth month. The fourth month is the month of Tammuz. Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz. So it's on the 9th. It's a Beferish Pasuk. The Pasuk, Tanakh, tells us, the biblical text itself tells us explicitly that the breach happened on the 9th. So why are you telling me that one of the five things that happened on the 17th was the breach? Amar Rava, lo kasha. Kan barishona, kan bishnia. It depends on which Beis HaMikdash you're talking about. Tisha B'Av, this time of year, we commemorate the destruction of both Batei Mikdash. We'll see shortly that both Batei Mikdash, both temples were destroyed on Tisha B'Av. The destruction of both of them was on Tisha B'Av. When was the city breached in order to lead up to and culminate in the destruction? It depends. In the case of the first Beis HaMikdash, Desanya, Barishona Hufkoir B'Tisha B'Tamuz. The first time the temple was breached on the 7th, the second time on the 9th, the second time the temple was breached on the 17th. So it depends. When the Mishnah says one of the five events that happened on the 17th is the breach of the walls of Yerushalayim, what is that a reference to? Which destruction is that a reference to? It's a reference to the second destruction. Because the first destruction, in the case of the first destruction, the breach of the walls happened not on the 17th, but happened on the 9th. The Pasuk that we cite here in Yirmiyah, Yirmiyah is living through Churban Bayis Rishon. Yirmiyah describes his historical context. That was the 9th. The Mishnah describes its historical context, which is shortly after, in the shadow of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, so therefore they have the 17th. Now just stop for a second and think. Rabbi Soloveitchik would always remind us of something fascinating that we don't always think about. So we've all been multiple times to the Ir Atika. So you go to Yerushalayim, and you go down Mamila, and you're walking into Shaar Yafo. So how long does it take to walk from Shaar Yafo to the Kotel? So in the olden days, we used to go straight. We used to go straight into the Shuk. So today, we don't really go so much. The last couple of years already, we don't go for the Shuk. We make a right turn. And you pass the museum, the Migdal. And then you pass the police station. And then it gets narrow. And then you go straight, and you're in the Armenian Quarter. And you come to Herzliya. You make a left turn. You go straight, you go down the hill, you go through the parking lot, you go down the hill, there's the Kotel. How long does it take to walk from Shaar Yafo to the Kotel?
8 minutes.
8 minutes. Now I'm going to compound. Because in the days of ancient times when Beis HaMikdash Haya Kayam, the wall was not where Shaar Yafo is. The wall was halfway down. If you go to the Kardo, right across from the Kardo, there's a shtickle wall. That shtickle wall is where the wall was. Now I'm going to rephrase my question. How long does it take to walk from the Kardo through a couple of pizza shops, past the post office, down the hill, down the steps, boom, to the Kotel? Now we just shaved off 6 minutes. It took them, in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, from the 9th of Tammuz until the 9th of Av, to get to the Har HaBayis. in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. It took them from the 17th of Tammuz to the 9th of Av to get to the Har HaBayis. What takes us 4.5 minutes took them 3 or 4 weeks. And that's the reason Rabbi Soloveitchik taught us why in the kinos that we say on Tisha B'Av, there's a whole kina for Arei Kohanim. There's a whole kina for the 24 Kohen cities that were destroyed. Vos epis yichus for the Arei Kohanim. Why do we give them special treatment? A lot of cities were destroyed. All the cities were destroyed. Vos epis the Arei Kohanim ayachsonim. And the answer is because the Kohanim were the ones who fought hand-to-hand combat for 3 weeks that it took the strong army, whether the army in the first Beis HaMikdash or the army in the second Beis HaMikdash. What takes us 3.5 minutes took them 3 weeks because of the selflessness of the Kohanim who refused to allow the enemies to come close to the Har HaBayis. And therefore, because the Kohanim were congregated there and because they lived there, and because they were the ones that were working on Har HaBayis, they get special treatment. I'll call upon him in the Bavli. The Bavli says, we just saw the Gemara, that there's a difference between the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash. Now let's turn to page 3. Let's look at the Yerushalmi. The Talmud Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, asks the same question that the Bavli asks. And it's underlined. V'hufka ha'ir. Towards the bottom of page 3. Zok Yerushalmi ksiv betisha lachodesh hufka ha'ir. Va'at omar ha'chein. You're telling me the Mishnah is the same Mishnah. The Bavli, the Yerushalmi, it's the same Mishnah. Which means that one of the 5 events that happened on Shivas or B'Tamuz is that the city walls are breached. In fact, Yerushalmi, what are you talking about? The Pasuk says Beferish that it happened on the 9th. Listen to this. Amar Rab Tanchum Bar Chani Lo'i Kilkul Cheshbonos Yeshkat. How do you translate Kilkul Cheshbonos? Cheshbon is keeping track. And Kilkul means Lekalkel. Kuf Lamed means to Kayamachim, to spoil. They lost track. There was a mistake in the time. Look at the Korban HaEidah, the little hour on the right-hand side. Kilkul Cheshbonos Yeshkan. Meirov Hatzoros Tohu B'Cheshbon. They made a mistake. They really thought it was the 9th. But in reality, it was on the 17th. But they were so caught up. They were so famushkit and fayushkit. They were so overwhelmed. They lost track of time. They were so under pressure. Every day they were plotting. Day wasn't day and night wasn't day. They couldn't keep track. And because they couldn't keep track, they thought it was the 9th. But it wasn't the 9th. In fact, in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, it was also on the 17th. But they thought it was the 9th. It's a Beferish Pasuk. The Pasuk says explicitly it was the 9th. Continues the Korban HaEidah. V'lo ratza ha-mikra l'shanos mima she'som chuheim lomar kaviyochol anochi imo b'tzar. That God left this error for all eternity. God institutionalized this error for all time. Because God wanted us to know that as it were, he's also for tumult. And he's also for yushkit. God knew what day it was. God knew it was the 17th. But yet God lets Yirmiyahu write in Kisvei HaKodesh. And we believe that Kisvei HaKodesh is divine. Yirmiyahu didn't just write his own book. God told him what to write. It's Ruach HaKodesh. He's a prophet. Prophecy means he speaks through God. God speaks through him. God told him to write the 9th because the Jews erroneously thought that it was the 9th. Because they were so overwhelmed. And so we institutionalize the overwhelmingness, the losing of track of time for all eternity, because God, as it were, wants to give us a sense that he's also together with us, which is a fundamental principle on Tisha B'Av. Now, if you turn to top page 4, this Yerushalmi is quoted in Tosfos and Rosh Hashanah, top of page 4. Take a look at the bottom part of Tosfos, in the top right of page 4, Kilkul Cheshbonos HaYusham, Upolig Ashas Didat. So if I were to ask you, what day was the city walls breached during the Churban Bayis Rishon? What day of Tammuz were the walls breached leading up to the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash? What's the answer? What's the answer? It's a machlokes, Bavli and Yerushalmi. According to the Bavli, it was on the 9th. According to the Yerushalmi, no, it was on the 17th, just like the second one. There's a historical machlokes, the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, as to when the breach took place the first time around. Says Taisis Rotzolomar, Demitoch Tirdosam, because they were so overwhelmed, To'u Becheshbonam, they made a mistake in the counting. The Shulchan Aruch, right below in the middle of page 4, paskins the following lahalacha. The Shulchan Aruch explains as follows. In Tziv Beis, Afal Gaf, Dichsiv Bekra, Bechodesh Arevi B'tishalach Chodesh Uvka Ha'ir, even though the pasuk says that it happened on the 9th, nevertheless, we don't fast on the 9th. We fast on the 17th, because even though the first one was breached on the 9th, since the second one was breached on the 17th, we fast on the 17th. Why? Mishum de Churban Bayis Sheni Chamir Lot. When are you going to fast? Are you going to fast on the 9th to commemorate the breach the first time? Or are you going to fast on the 17th to commemorate the breach the second time? What's the answer? You're going to fast on the 17th to commemorate the second time. Why? Mishum de Churban Bayis Sheni Chamir Lot. Why? Because we are living under the impact of the second destruction. The first destruction ended with a rebuilding. Now there's a second Beis HaMikdash. That's destroyed. There's seats over here. Feel free. Now that I drew attention to you, so don't feel self-conscious for a second.
Was there any commemoration after the destruction of the first, and when did it take
place? Yeah, there was a lot. There was a whole discussion about commemoration of the destruction of the first temple after the first temple. And in fact, after the rebuilding of the second temple, according to some, they still commemorated the destruction of the first temple. That's a huge issue. Was there a Tisha B'Av during the Second Commonwealth? So the Shulchan Aruch says we are under the impact of the second, and therefore we do the second. The Magen Avraham quotes from the Ramban. The Ramban says, you know what? You really, if you can, you should fast both. A Baal Nefesh should fast both on the 9th for the breach of the first one, and on the 17th for the breach of the second one. But we don't want to impose that because it's too much. You're going to fast on the 9th of Tammuz, then you're going to fast on the 17th of Tammuz, and then you're going to fast on the 9th of Av. We can't mandate it. But it's recommended if you feel like it, taka, you know, give a krecht also for the first one. However, continues the Magen Avraham, that only applies according to which opinion? That only applies according to the Bavli. But according to the Yerushalmi, nothing happened on the 9th. You remember, according to the Yerushalmi, both times it happened on the 17th. So there's no reason to do anything on the 9th. The 9th is erroneously cast in stone forever, but it's not historically accurate. So my first point is that part of feeling a sense of mourning is a sense of losing track of time. If somebody is in Avelos, we differentiate in rabbinic literature between what we call Avelos Chadasha and what we call Avelos Yeshana. Avelus Chadasha is new Avelus, is the Avelus of an individual who loses a close relative. If somebody, God forbid, loses a close relative, so there's a freshness, and there is a intensity, and there's a directness, there's a rawness. That's Avelus Chadasha. Avelus Yeshana is the old, old mourning. 2,000 years worth of mourning. When it comes to Avelus Chadasha, you lose track of time. When somebody said Shiva, you think you don't know what day it is, you don't know up from down, everything merges, everything blends, you're sitting there for hours. It's very cathartic, it's very helpful, but you don't know up from down anymore. And the point to make this as meaningful as we can is to try to conjure up a notion of losing track of time, also in the context of Avelus Yeshan. Why is Tisha B'Av important and why should I care about it? I want to suggest three comments, three ideas. And then I want to conclude with an ending point. First reason why Tisha B'Av is important in 2009, and at least we should ask ourselves that question. What other people mourns for something that happened in its national history 2,000 years ago and considers it to be significant? So we at least should ask ourselves the question. It's not, remember, going through the motions. It's not just doing it. It's trying to feel it. It's trying to hold on to something. It's trying to make it meaningful. Like, I'm a cool guy. You know, like, you're cool. You're like, you know, you're Americans. You're Upper West Siders, like the epitome of cool. Why are you sitting on the floor tomorrow night? What are you doing? Machzich Narish. You're sophisticated people. Why do you sit on the floor a whole day? Why are you fasting? Why? First answer is because a lot of things happen on Tisha B'Av that we should remember. So I mentioned to you earlier that the Mishnah says, Chamisha Dvarim, five things happen on Shavasa B'Tammuz and five things happen on Tisha B'Av. What are the five things that happen on Tisha B'Av? So go back to page 2, the top of page 2. The top of page two. B'tisha B'Av nigzer al avoseinu shelo yechnasu la'aretz. The first thing that happened was that when the meraglim, when the spies came back with their report, the decree was that Jews should not go into the land of Israel right away. Numbers 2 and 3 were the destructions of both temples. Charev avayis b'rishono b'shnia. Number 4 is Nilkada Beitar. Beitar was captured. And number 5, v'nechrash ha'ir, the city of Jerusalem was plowed up. Five things that happened. Obviously, you understand very well that the Mishnah is only going to include those historical events that happened until the time of the Mishnah. So already after the Mishnah, there are a whole other series of events that allegedly also occurred on Tisha B'Av. So why do you know, for example, that occurred on Tisha B'Av after the time of the Mishnah, which could not possibly therefore be included in the Mishnah? Spanish expulsion. So the Spanish expulsion is probably the most famous. There are a couple of others as well that I've heard, but I'm not really sure about. Let's go with the Spanish expulsion because it is so common. The notion that the Spanish expulsion happened on Tisha B'Av is a misnomer because there was no expulsion on one day. You can't expel Jews from a country in one day. The Edict of Expulsion, signed by Ferdinand and Isabella, in Granada, in southern Spain. Some of you have been to Spain. Some of you have been to southern Spain. Some of you have been to Granada. Some of you have been to the Alhambra Palace in Granada. Some of you have been to the Hall of the Ambassadors in the Alhambra Palace in Granada, in southern Spain. It's in that room, in the Hall of the Ambassadors, Ada Yom Hazeh. It's still there, and it looks the same. In that room, Ferdinand and Isabella signed the Edict of Expulsion on March 31st, 1492. And the edict stipulates that Jews have 3 months to leave the country. It did not take effect for an entire month. A, because they have to get the word out. You know, in the olden days, the way you got the word out is you gave it to somebody and he got on a horse and he brought it to the city. It took a while for everybody to find out about it. And also, the Jewish community desperately tried to stave off the edict of expulsion, to try to get rid of it. They were not successful. It didn't work. A month later, May 1st, it took effect, which means Jews have 3 months to leave. May, June, July, which means that the last day in July of 1492 is the last day that Jews, professing Jews, could be in Spain. You understand that if you're a Jew and you wanted to stay in Spain, you could stay in Spain. Except you can't act like a Jew anymore. By staying in Spain, you're making an announcement that you have converted to Christianity. No professing Jew could remain in Spain after July 31st, 1492. So Abravanel tells us in his Perush on Yirmiyah at the bottom of page 4, V'haya yom ha-yitziyah Tisha B'av, bottom of page 4. The day of leaving. He doesn't mean the day of leaving. As I explained to you, there was no one day of leaving. There were 3 months of leaving. The final day of leaving was on Tisha. However, it turns out that this is a huge discussion among academic historians. And on page 5, I xeroxed a machlokes between Yitzhak Baer and Ben Zion Netanyahu. Yitzhak Baer, Professor Baer from Israel, professor at the Hebrew University, wrote a very, very important book. It's called The History of the Jews and Christian Spain. And Baer took off his shoes and socks, and Baer looked at the calendar, and Baer said that July 31st, 1492, was not Tisha B'Av. July 31st, 1492, was the 7th of Av. Okay, Mishke Ferlach, we'll give him the 7th of Av. It's close enough, but it's not exactly Tisha B'Av. Ben Zion Netanyahu, Prime Minister Netanyahu's father, who was a professor of Jewish history here in the United States for decades, wrote a biography of Abravanel, and he said that how could it be that Abravanel would get it wrong? I just showed you at the bottom of page 4 that Abravanel says, V'haya yom ha-yitziyah Tisha B'Av. And he should know because he was there, because he lived through it, because he was one of those courtiers who tried to stave off the edict of expulsion unsuccessfully. And he was one of those who was expelled, who left from Spain at the end of 1492. So it's probably August 2nd. It's not exactly July 31st. There's a whole debate. Either way, it's close enough. Either way, it's close enough. And in fact, in the Sephardi Kinos book, there are references to the Spanish expulsion. Ashkenazo-centric, as many of us are, we don't have in our Kinos book a reference to the Spanish expulsion. They do, as they should, as we should, because it happened to the Jewish people. So it's close enough. And there are a number of other events allegedly happened on Tisha B'Av. So the first reason why Tisha B'Av is significant is because we're commemorating now a series of events, ancient and medieval, maybe even into modern, that happened on this day. The second rationale is far more significant, and in a sense makes the first rationale moot. The second rationale says as follows. We have, by we I mean us, and I mean Jews throughout the ages, have a balance. On the one hand, we have had a very difficult experience. Our historical experience has been the subject of tremendous pain and suffering. The late Professor Salo Barone, professor of Jewish history at Columbia University, used to talk about the lachrymose conception of Jewish history. That Jewish history is a story of sadness. It's a story of pain. It's a story of suffering. So that's not true, because if it were true, we wouldn't be here. If it was all bad, we couldn't function. We would not exist. There were decades. There were centuries. There were countries. There were communities when Baruch Hashem, we were able to function. We were able to create cultures. We were able to build communities. We were able to build families. We were able to build a culture of commentaries on the Torah and commentaries on the Gemara and responsa literature. We have a rich culture from medieval times, which is only conceivable in a reality where we had the capacity to do that. But still, Nebuch, we've had a tough time. So on the one hand, we want to commemorate and remember what happened. We don't want to turn our backs on that. We don't want to deny that. It's disrespectful to those who suffered. We want to identify it. We want to somehow connect to it. On the other hand, if that's all we do, then we end up paralyzed. We end up unable to live positive, forward-looking, constructive, meaningful Jewish lives and general lives. And so therefore, the rabbi solved the problem. And the rabbi said that Tisha B'Av is a day on which we should commemorate all Jewish tragedy. I don't care if it happened only on Tisha B'Av. If it happened on Tisha B'Av, not on Tisha B'Av. I don't only commemorate on Tisha B'Av what happened on Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is a day that's set aside to remember all Jewish tragedy. We pour everything onto Tisha B'Av. And so on the kinos that we'll recite Mirtz Hashem on Thursday, there's a kino for the Asara Aruge Malchus, the 10 martyrs. It has already been pointed out many, many centuries ago that it didn't happen the way it says it happened. There was never a time when 10 rabbis lined up Nebuch and were killed during the Hadrianic persecution. Didn't happen. And it certainly didn't happen on Tisha B'Av. We don't know when it happened. Whatever happened didn't necessarily happen on Tisha B'Av. We mention it on Tisha B'Av. At the end, on Thursday, there's a kina by Rabbi Meir of Rothenburg, entitled Cha'alis Rufa Ba'esh, that mourns for the burning of rabbinic Talmudic Torah manuscripts in Paris in 1242. Rabbi Meir of Rothenburg was a young man. He was studying in the yeshiva in Paris, in the yeshiva of Rabbi Yechiel of Paris, and he witnesses in front of the city hall today. We know exactly in Paris where it was. In front of the Hotel de Ville in Paris, right on the water, right on the Seine, opposite that little island where Zon der Zugen, there's a big building. Right there, in front of the city hall today, it's a huge open area, and right there it was burned, and he saw it. When did it happen? So there's a discussion about when it happened. It did not happen on Tisha B'Av, but we mentioned it on Tisha B'Av. The most famous example is on page 6. On page 6, I xeroxed from one of the kinos that we say that talks about the Crusades. There are 4 passages that deal with the Crusades on Tisha B'Av. One of them, Mi'iten Rosh Hashanah, is unabashedly and unusually historical, explicitly historical. And it tells us on page 6 which are the communities that were destroyed in 1096 by the first crusaders as they were moving through Europe from southern France to the Holy Land, which they finally conquered in 1099. The Pope Urban II calls for a crusade in Clermont, in southern France, in 1095, at the end of 1095. 1099, they show up and they conquer Jerusalem from the Muslims. On the way, they destroy significant Jewish communities, primarily in Germany, primarily in the Rhine Valley, primarily the 3 famous Jewish communities of Speyer, Vermeisa, and Magenza. Worms, actually, we'll start from the beginning, Speyer, Worms, and Mainz, south to north on the Rhine Valley. I was there 2 weeks ago in Speyer, 2 weeks ago in Worms, 2 weeks ago in Mainz. You go south to north on the Rhine Valley. These were major centers of Jewish life, of Jewish learning in the second half of the 11th century. In 1096, they're destroyed. When are they destroyed? When are they destroyed? It tells us in the Kina, Haruge Speira, in Speyer, it happened on the 8th day of the second month. What's the second month? Nisan, Iyar, the 8th day of Iyar. Next, Kahal Vermeisen and worms. Pa'amayim kitshushem hamayuchad b'mora. They were destroyed twice. Once on the 23rd of Iyar and once on the 1st of Sivan. Next, below that, b'chodesh ha'shlishi b'shlishi is Mainz, Magensa, the 3rd of Sivan. So we know exactly when they were destroyed. They just told us. So then the author of this text asks, if I just told you when it happened, and none of them were today is Tisha B'Av, that's the day that I'm reciting this, why am I mentioning it? Why is it relevant for me today? It didn't happen today. Why am I talking about it? Answer, V'chi ein lehosif moed shevra v'savera. We don't add days of mourning. Therefore, al kein hayom livyasi a'orara. I do it today. Did it have to happen today? No. Today is the day that I set aside to commemorate all Jewish tragedy. This is what Tisha B'Av is. Why is Tisha B'Av important in 2009? Because it's a day on which, and the key word here is subsume, it's a day on which we subsume the totality of Jewish tragedy, and we do it, on the one hand, out of fealty to those events that happened, and on the other hand, to create a space the rest of the time in order to be creative and in order to be forward-looking and in order to be able to build and in order to crawl out from all of these terrible events that happen. We localize it. We focus it on Tisha B'Av. Now, what about the Shoah? There's a huge debate whether or not the Shoah should be remembered on Tisha B'Av only as well. Maybe the Shoah should also be subsumed under Tisha B'Av. So this is a huge discussion. And there were those, namely Rabbi Soloveitchik, who I quoted earlier, every year, when he came to this line in this Kina, said, just like the Crusades were subsumed under Tisha B'Av, even though it didn't happen on Tisha B'Av, the Holocaust should also be subsumed under Tisha B'Av. That Tisha B'Av is the day that's appropriate to remember the Holocaust. That there should not be a separate Yom HaShoah was his position. Our community did not follow that. This synagogue and my synagogue and my present synagogue, we have a Yom HaShoah commemoration. Because the consensus in our community is that the Holocaust was so great and so sui generis that it's unsubsumable, that it can't be subsumed under anything else. However, even if one were to accept that position, and I feel strongly about it, Tisha B'Av is still the day that we should think about the Holocaust. And there are kinos that have recently, in the last 20, 25 years, been composed that reflect the Holocaust experience that should be recited on Tisha B'Av. I don't think it's the only time, but it certainly is a time. And it's a time that we remember Jewish tragedy. And it's so much a part of our historical experience that even in 2009, it bears remembering. Bears remembering the 8 sweet neshamas who were gunned down in Yeshivat Merkaz Arav a year and a half ago. It bears remembering terror victims in Israel. It bears remembering tragedies that occur to us as a nation into the 21st century, all of that, we should remember on Tisha B'Av. And therefore, it's not that we're sitting here on the floor and thinking about something that happened 2,000 years ago. We're sitting on the floor and we're thinking about things that happened not that long ago. And hopefully, it should only be in the past and not in the present. The third reason why I think Tisha B'Av is important, and that is because we should not underestimate the absence of a Beis HaMikdash. I think about this very often. It's not just it's a building and the building was destroyed and who cares, it was so long ago. But for us, the Beis HaMikdash represents, and certainly the third Beis HaMikdash, which comes with the arrival of Mashiach, the eschatological era, the end of days, the world as we know it will be different. Beis HaMikdash represents morality. Beis HaMikdash represents Lo Yisa Goyal Goy Cherev. Beis HaMikdash represents people living life of human decency. And last week, we were just reminded of the cesspool that parts of our community has sunk to. And that, to me, is directly attributed to the lack of a Beis HaMikdash. People who are evil, people do disgusting things. It's humiliating, it's horrific. Were there a Beis HaMikdash, things would be different. And so, as of last week, I feel the lack of a Beis HaMikdash. So that, to me, is the third one. The second one says we should remember all Jewish tragedies on Tisha B'Av. The third one says the lack of a complete, special, positive and appropriate world is a function of a lack of a Beis HaMikdash. It's not so much a din in physical tragedy. It's a din in ethics. It's a din in morality. It's a din in human decency. The Beis HaMikdash represents ethical perfection. And that's what we're going to have in Mirtz Hashem when it happens. And as long as we don't have it, we have what we have. So it's not such a stretch to think about why is Tisha B'Av important for me in 2009. It's very important for me in 2009. First of all, because a lot of things happen on it. Second of all, because it doesn't matter how many things happen on it, because even if it didn't happen on it, it's an important thing to think about. And third of all, the world, yeah, it's yuck. It's a yucky world. It's not a happy place. The Jewish world is not a happy place. And we need to own up to that and take responsibility for it. And a piece of that is the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And now I want to conclude. I want to conclude with the following point that I also heard from Rabbi Soloveitchik. And I want to share with you one text, three words, that have changed my whole understanding of what Tisha B'Av is all about. If Tisha B'Av is a day of mourning, it's a Yom Avelus. If Tisha B'Av, Rabbi Robinson mentioned in his introduction, is a Yom Tshuva, you see, Tisha B'Av is a day of mourning. It's also a day of fasting. Halachically, it has a character of a Yom Avelus, and it has a character of a Yom Tainus. Tainus means a fast day. An Avel doesn't have to fast, and somebody who's fasting is not an Avel. They're two separate halachic categories. A mourner is not obligated to fast, and somebody who fasts is not necessarily a mourner. They're separate. Mourning is one aspect. Fasting, tainus, is associated with tshuva. But if it is all of that, it's also a yom nechama. It's a day of comfort, and it's a day of consolation. This is reflected halachically in the fact that in the afternoon of Tisha B'Av, all kinds of things change. In the afternoon of Tisha B'Av, there are a number of things that we are allowed to do that we're not allowed to do until the afternoon of Tisha B'Av. So, for example, sitting up, yeshiva al gabe karka. So we sit on the floor until chatzos, or until mincha, and then we could sit up. For example, putting on tefillin. For example. Not quite. Hate to break it to you. You'll have to hang in there just a little bit longer. Malacha. Certainly Surah Malacha change. What paragraph is the paradigmatic paragraph that we say in the Shemoneh Esrei on Tisha B'Av? And we say it only at beginning at Mincha. Namely, Nachem. Nachem, which means Nechama, which means comfort, kicks in only in the afternoon. And the question is why? Why is it that these things change in the afternoon? And then, in fact, it gets easier. The day somehow gets winding down, it gets tzibislach, easier. There are things that we can begin to do that we weren't able to do until now. Why?
So does
Avelos. But we don't say Mikzas Hayom Kukulo on Tisha B'Av. But yet these things get easier. Why do they get easier? And I'll strengthen the question. Rabbi Yochanan Shlita. I'll strengthen the question. What happened in the afternoon? When was the Beis HaMikdash burnt? When was the Beis HaMikdash set to fire? The Gemara says it started on the 9th in the afternoon. Ubitchi'i samach lechashecha hitzisu bo es ha'or. It started burning on the 9th in the afternoon.
This Thursday afternoon at 6:30 is when it started to burn. So there's something off here. There's a disconnect. Dafka at the moment when they burnt the Beis HaMikdash, it's a little bit easier for me. On the contrary, if I couldn't do melacha until the afternoon, then for sure I shouldn't be able to do melacha. If I couldn't say nachem all day, now I'm going to first say nachem. If I sat on the floor all day, now I'm going to get up and sit on a chair and be comfortable. On the contrary, I should ratchet up my level of mourning because it's dafka now when the Beis HaMikdash was burnt. I thought that Tisha B'Av is about the burning of the temple. That's what I commemorate. It was burnt in the afternoon. It should be worse in the afternoon.
So Rabbi Soloveitchik quoted a medrash on page 9. Last page. Speaking of 9, I'm conscious of the 9. You see, it says in the advertisement, I never saw this before. It's fascinating. It says in that little booklet, that little YU Kollel booklet, it says 8 to 9. It doesn't say 8. Normally, when you announce a lecture, it tells the lecture begins at 8. It doesn't give you an end time. They gave me an end time. But there's no clock in here. So I don't know. I don't see a clock, you understand? But I do. So I got 5 minutes. Give me 5 minutes, and I'm very conscious of the time. The Medrash says as follows, an amazing story. The Pasuk says in Tehillim, Mizmar li Yosef, Elokim ba'u goyim benachal osech. What's Mizmar mean? What's a Mizmar? It's a song. It's a song. Mizmar la Asaf, a song for Asaf, Elokim, oh my God, ba'u goyim benachal osech. Our enemies came into our inheritance and destroyed it. So the Medrash says, Mizmar la Asaf? It's a song that our enemies came in and destroyed us? Kina la Asaf. Nehi la Asaf. It's awful. They're destroying us. What are you talking about? What are you smoking? It should say it's a Nehi. It's a mourning. It's a lament. It's not Mizmor. So the Medrash says, I'll tell you what. And the mashal is to a king who has a son. He loves the son. He builds him a beautiful home. The son rebels against the king. The king destroys the home. The teacher of the son starts to sing. Everybody comes running over to the teacher. Says, why are you singing? The king just destroyed the house of his son, your student. Why are you singing? So the teacher says, I'll tell you why I'm singing. Because my student sinned. What should have happened? My student should have been punished. My student should have been smacked. What did his father do? He vented his anger on the house and he spared the kid. By mir is a shtekel yamtiv. By mir, wow, my student is still around. Because by all rights, he should not be around anymore. He should have paid for his misbehavior. What's the tzushtel? Who sinned? The Jewish people sinned. Mitmecha to'enu. Golinu me'artzeinu. What should have happened? God forbid. God should have vented his anger on the people. What did God do? He vented his anger on the building. So dafka, the moment that the building burns, the people, as it were, heave a sigh of relief because they realize it's going to be the building and not them. So sever taka bisula gringer. Now look at the last text, the chida. I leave you with this chida. This is a mind-blowing chida. The Chida stands for Chaim Yosef David Azulai, 18th century Sephardi Jew. Birkei Yosef is a commentary on Orach Chaim. He quotes the Medrash, right where it's underlined. He quotes the Medrash, V'nosan tam leminhag, the end of the first line of the last paragraph. V'nosan tam leminhag, these are the minhagim, the customs about things getting easier, certain things getting easier after Chatzos. After Mincha, what's the reason? Kamosha Kasafti the Cheshi Yisro Ro'u the Betisha B'av Ba'erev Hitzisu Esh Be'echo, when they saw that the Beis HaMikdash was burned in the afternoon, Amru Mizmor Sheshafa Chamoso Aleitzim V'alavone. They sang because God vented his anger on the house. Next three words, V'samchu Simcha Gedola.
when they saw the Beis HaMikdash burning, it was a big yomtev for them. It was a simcha. What is going on in my whole life? I thought that Tisha B'Av is Nebuch. Nebuch, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. That's two out of the five events that we remember on Tisha B'Av. That's what it's all about, isn't it? Why am I fasting on Tisha B'Av? The temple was destroyed. The Beis HaMikdash is gone. No! When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Samchu, Simcha Gedol. Because there's something more profound. And what's more profound is that we mourn for the loss of Jewish self-identity. We mourn for the loss of Jewish pride. We mourn for Jewish suffering. We don't necessarily mourn for the building. Mizmor la'asaf Elokim ba'ogayim benachalosach. We mourn for a people that has been so adversely affected. And so therefore, what we come away with from Tisha B'Av is that the Jewish people is still around. By all rights, the Jewish people should not have been around. But that we're here. We're sitting here on a Tuesday night, the end of July, 2009. We're interested to study a little bit, to think about, to reflect upon what Tisha B'Av is, because we're here in a vibrant and thriving community, because Baruch Hashem we have families, and Baruch Hashem we have lives, and Baruch Hashem we have shuls, and Baruch Hashem we have day schools, and Baruch Hashem we have communities, and Baruch Hashem we have community organizations. So Tisha B'Av also has a positive aspect that we come out from, and it's gradually easing into it. So Mitzarecha, Tisha B'Av, on the one hand, is a Yom Tainis and a Yom Avelus. A, reminds us of Shivasa B'Tamas, losing track of time. B, one, so many things happen on it. B, two, I don't care if anything happened on it. I remember it anyway on Tisha B'Av, because that's a day that I commemorate all Jewish tragedies. B, three, because the Beis HaMikdash loss is so palpable for us. But at the end of the day, it's also a Yom Nechama, it's a day of comfort. Because at the end of the day, if the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, there'll be a third Beis HaMikdash. The Jewish people, Chas V'Shalom, were destroyed. That would have been the end. We should be Zoche, that we should experience the vibrancy of Jewish life and the strength of the Jewish people and the Jewish community to result in the building of Bayis Shlishi b'mehera b'yamim.
Thank you, Rabbi Schachter, for inspiring us with your words. Just wanted to announce tomorrow is the last day of the Yeshiva University Beit Midrash program here at Lincoln Square Synagogue, and I want to thank the entire community for hosting this program and being so warm and welcoming to the 12 young women who have been studying full-time in this program for the month of July, and to all of the community shirim for being so welcoming of this program. Tomorrow morning we have two shirim taking place, one at 9:30 a.m. and one at 11:15 a.m. And I wanted to announce tomorrow evening, following the reading of Eicha, Dr. Jeffrey Wolf will be speaking on the topic of Tisha B'Av. That's here at Lincoln Square Synagogue following the reading of Eicha. So thank you very much. We actually have refreshments sponsored by kosher.com.
Thank you. Yes.